Hi, I'm Robert Alcoholic.
I'm Robert.
It's great to be here and a privilege to be here. And Joan, my wife, is going to be telling her story tonight, so I'm anxious to hear it. And I've seen her, I get the liberty of, since she is my wife, we're both in recovery, you get to see her grow and change and blossom into the woman that God wants her to be. So here's Joan.
That was nice, Robert. Thanks so much. Hi, everybody. My name's Joan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joan.
And I'm glad to be here tonight. I got to come here about 2 or 3 weeks ago to hear one of my friends tell her story, and I didn't know what to expect here because I see these like fancy-looking flyers, and so that made me think this was one of these large auditoriums with all these people. So I really wasn't like. I really wasn't nervous like I normally am when I'm going to tell my story. And some of it, I believe, is God's grace and kind of the space I've been in lately, which has been a good space. And the other thing is knowing that there's not a gazillion people here. So anyways, it's feel more comfortable. I got this really nice message from Jerry. I had a meeting before the meeting with my husband. We went to Cafe Sunflower and had dinner. And I got this really nice little note from Jerry saying that he was hoping to make it, but it's Valentine's Day at the restaurant, so maybe he'll come in at some point. And I was thinking tonight about, Valentine's Day, like in early sobriety, you know, just how much that sucked, you know? I don't know who all's single in here, but I spent years and years in sobriety being single, and it wasn't my favorite holiday, you know? Okay, I've told you who I am. Let me tell you a little bit about my sobriety. My sobriety date is August 19th, 2005. So God willing, I will celebrate 10 years in August, which is pretty freaking amazing and a miracle. I have a sponsor. She's here. She has a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring a couple great women and I sponsor a lot of other women for, 5 minutes, 10 minutes sometimes, you know how it goes. But I have a couple that I've had for a while, and that's really cool. How many people here have less than a year, just to get a sense of, okay. Less than 6 months? You have, yeah, okay, cool. Just, I always like to know, like, how many people, are new is as far as what I'm going to talk about. All right, so when I got sober, and I drank for a while. So let me tell you a little bit about, I just turned 43. My birthday is February 7th, 1972. I'm an only child. I was born here in Atlanta, Georgia, kind of coincidentally, accidentally. My family's from Baltimore. My dad had like a work assignment down here for a year, and so I was born, then went back to Baltimore, and there was some moving between here and there until I wound up here like in around seventh grade and have stayed here ever since. Lived in Colorado a little bit, and like I said, original family's from Baltimore. I had my first drink when I was, I think, about 14. I mean, my first like real drink. In between getting born and being 14, my first drink. I was thinking a little bit today about, my family. And, I've got a close relationship today with my parents, and that's a real blessing. They live I live in Alpharetta. They live in Alpharetta. They're good people. They did the best they could. They both came from pretty sick families as far as, pretty profound alcoholism on my mom's side, some physical abuse, mental illness issues on my dad's side, and they kind of wanted to do better for themselves and for me, and they tried. You know how that works when you don't really have much of a solution, but you're like, hey, we kind of have these histories, but we're going to do better. And it's like, well, they kind of did better. They tried. But in addition to that, there's just this feeling that I have that a lot of us have as a kid, just being kind of, I was different, feeling different, feeling, depressed. I was very introverted. you know, always feeling like something was missing, you know, that my parents were different or that somehow I was even different from my parents. You know, they didn't, you know, get me or understand me. And I mean, that went on at a really young age, you know, so I was, would not say I had a happy childhood, and it's not like I got the snot beat out of me or anything. I just remembered I'm not supposed to curse, so that I'm glad. I might have supposed to dress up too, but I feel good that somebody else has on some Georgia gear, so, you know, this is kind of dressing up. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an awful childhood, but it wasn't, you know, both my parents kind of, at least my mom especially, struggled a lot with depression and just wasn't real, you know, present. And, you know, it was just me, and I was, you know, pretty depressed. And, you know, that was pretty much how things went, you know. And then you hit 10, and you're awkward, and you go through changes. And, you know, I don't know if that's happy times for anybody, but, you know, you add that layer onto, like, already kind of low-level misery and depression, and it's like you've been needing a drink for a long time, you know. I mean, I probably needed a drink from the time I was 4 or 5. And when I finally got one, like I said, I was in high school, maybe 8th grade or 9th grade, and I remember hanging out with my girlfriend. Her name was Bobby, and she was my first drinking and using buddy, and she actually just passed away. She was living on the streets for years, you know, in connection with this illness, and had become very sick and just died about a year ago, which is really sad. But and that's the first time I told my story, I think, since she's passed. But anyway, so we had our first, you know, we started drinking together when we were in high school, and she was the youngest of 5. And her family was really drinking, partying, you know, trying to keep an eye on the younger kids. But like by kid 5, it was kind of like, you know, I mean, you could really do anything you wanted to. So I was really into hanging out with her and trying to spend the night with her as much as I could, you know. But I don't remember, my very first drink. Like I remember having a beer or two with her once and not really getting a real strong effect. But I do remember, you know, in that time period, the first few months when I got enough in me that I really got the effect from it, that it was, you know, and I remember specifically thinking, like, this is what I've been looking for, you know, my whole life. Like, this is awesome. Like, best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, it really treated whatever it was that was, you know, going on with me inside my head and in my feelings and all that. And I drank pretty much problematically since the war. You know, as soon as I started drinking and I got that effect, it was always a problem. You know, and I was talking to, I went to this meeting the other night, and they were talking about kind of the stages of alcoholism that's described in the big book. And we don't read a lot past, like, you know, how it works or into action a lot of times, but like the To Wives section talks about the 4 types of alcoholics. It's kind of saying maybe your husband's that, you know, here he's a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4. And it was talking about, you know, like the type 1 might be a heavy drinker and maybe drinks only heavy on certain occasions. Is pretty sure he can handle his liquor, it doesn't cause him harm, whatever. But I was like, I don't know that I ever was a 1. Like, I don't know that I ever, you know, was a, like, a regular hard drinker or a good time drinker. Like, I was pretty much, like, throwing up on myself from the word go. You know what I mean? And then, like, having people mad at me, like, I gotta somehow, like, figure out how to, like, walk and stand up and worry about, like, I got to clean up my puke, you know. Like, it was pretty much like that, you know, in high school. And being not just, like, I had a couple drinks and I feel okay, but, you know, just really being obliterated and having parents that were really upset about it. And my mom was very upset, you know, because she watched her dad kind of kill himself until, you know, drinking, and he wound up dying in his 30s of acute alcohol poisoning, you know. And so she grew up watching that stuff, and it, I think, scared the snot out of her. I'm trying to think of another not curse word. So anyways, you know, but it was a problem. But it's kind of hard because in high school, you know, you've got your groups of people, you know, and there are groups of people that they're like, these are the jocks And I went to Dunwoody High School at that time. And it was like, here's the jocks and here's the emo people, but they didn't call them emo people then. And these are the stoners and they look this way and they do this and their main goal in life is to get messed up. And so I immediately aligned myself with that group of people. So it wasn't like, oh, I meant to only have two or three, but this happened. It was like I immediately was like, I'm hanging out with the group that's what they want to have happen every day as much as they can kind of thing. And like I said, my parents just really were like, oh, my gosh, what happened? She was like obedient and straight A's and this and that, and now she's this, you know. And I was like, I like this, and, you know, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. So, and I remember that was, you know, 9th grade, 10th grade. My parents did a geographic on me. They actually moved to Alpharetta. So they bought this piece of land that was like a little horse farm with a horse on it, a couple horses. And they're like, we're moving to Alpharetta, which at that time, this was in the 80s. And my friends in Dunwoody said, where in the world is Alpharetta? I mean, nobody knew where Alpharetta was, but... you know, I got people to come pick me up, you know, and I still, and I also, of course, found people that live near me that did what I did. I mean, that's pretty much what we do. You know, it's not going to work. So we did that geographic. They put me in private school. I got kicked out of that private school for having some outside issues at school. And then I was like, I had a boyfriend at the time, and we were like running away because his parents wanted to put him in treatment and my parents wanted to put me in treatment, and he's like, we're gonna move to Florida. What do you think about that? And it took me a minute, and I was a little scared, but I was like, yeah, you know. So anyway, we did that, and that lasted all about a week, and until, like, we got pulled over by some police, and I had to like, run barefoot down some highway in Florida until I got caught. I remember being, like, it's like tumbleweeds, but whatever they have in Florida that are kind of like tumbleweeds, like these bramble bush things. I remember being barefooted and hauling butt, and I got put in some kind of like a little juvenile home detention thing for a little bit. And then they put me in treatment, and that was my first treatment, and I was 16 years old. And that was a really long-term treatment center. It was probably about a year and a half, and there was sort of an inpatient and outpatient component, but the outpatient component was really heavily monitored. So, you know, the success rate, assuming you stayed with it, was pretty high based on kind of how intense it was. I mean, I don't know about long-term success, but, you know, it really it was a lot of kind of behavior modification. The steps were referenced, AA was referenced, but it wasn't a real heavy 12-step thing. It was kind of like you did bad things and, you know, you screwed up your life and how do you feel about that and let's get back on track kind of a thing. And, you know, it worked for a little bit, you know. I mean, it was, I graduated that program, as they called it, when I was like a senior in high school. So I spent, like, you know, my 11th grade year, and then at some point going into my senior year, I finished it and was, you know, clean and sober, but no real, I believed in God, you know, always believed in God, and I believed that I was making a lot of bad self-destructive choices, and now, you know, I'm kind of back on track with life, but I didn't have any idea that I had an allergy to alcohol. That, I don't remember that being discussed at all. I didn't know anything about the obsession and the idea of alcoholism being this ism that sort of needs to be treated and needs to be dealt with and all that. I didn't get that at all. And so amazingly, what I did is I hung out with other kids that had been to this treatment center. You know, and you'll see it sometimes at AA meetings, you know, where there's kids that do various, you know, amount of work, and, you know, a lot of what they're doing is the fellowship and all kind of hanging out with each other, you know, and they kind of hang out until they slowly, you know, drink, or some people get it. And I didn't get it. You know, I definitely did not get it. I did hang out and not drink for a while. But I want to say, I know I was 20. I know I started drinking again at 20. I don't know if it was 19, but I do remember I was under 21 because I had like a ticket, like a speeding ticket. And I had a friend that, like, when it was a piece of paper, you can kind of alter the year, you know, you can do something with perfume and something, you know, to kind of change the carbon to where it looked like I was, you know, at that point, I can't remember if I was 19 or just turned 20, but that was about the age I was when I started drinking again. And that drink, I remember. I mean, I remember, and I was thinking about it for a while. I mean, I really was. And I was like, I mean, there was this thing going on in my head for about, you know, a good 6 months that was like, the problem was the outside issues. It's not, you know, alcohol. It was the other stuff I was doing. It was the friends I had. It was, I was young, you know, who's going to be able to handle their liquor when they're 14, you know. I'm in college now. This is a normal thing to do. You know, maybe the idea that I'd never do this again was kind of overreacting, you know. I mean, it's just all that thinking. And this went on for a long time. And I talked to a friend of mine that was not, you know, a sober person at all, but, you know, drank every now and then. And I was like, I think I'm going to try this drinking thing again, you know. And he was like, well, it seemed like you really got in so much trouble with it before. It seems like it would be, you know, make sense just not to test fate, you know. And I was like, yeah, but do you want to give up your whole life just based on some, you know, mistake in your teenage years, you know? That's how I looked at it. Him as a non-alcoholic is thinking, what's not having a drink of alcohol compared to you might wind up in an institution? But that didn't make sense to me. And what I didn't know was that, what I believe is that, you know, the ism of the alcoholism had come back. You know, I wasn't happy. I'm restless, I'm irritable and discontent. I want some relief. I see people look like they're having fun, you know, and I want to have fun. And I remember that. I remember being at a friend's house. I remember sitting on the edge of that friend's bed. I remember it was a Heineken, and I remember exactly how it felt when it hit my lips, when it went down, and when I felt it in my stomach, like the first sip. I mean, I just remember that like it was yesterday. And that was, and I was like, thank God, you know? It was immediately, and it says this in the book, that alcohol changes us. When we put it in our body, it changes us in the bodily and mental sense. And it was like, I could feel it sensationally, and my mind was telling me, like, why have you been not drinking all this time? Like, this was crazy and stupid of you to think that this wasn't okay, you know? And, you know, the thing that's tricky about alcohol, because it is cunning, baffling, and powerful, is that, you know, as a 20-year-old that was in college, and I made pretty much straight A's in college, you know, I did really well. It's not like it looked the same, you know, when I started back up. Like, the way it looked at 14 is not how it looked at 20. You know, I had stuff that I liked. I had, you know, a decent relationship with my parents. I had good grades. I had, you know, I mean, heck, I was a level one scooper at Ben and Jerry's ice cream. You know, I felt good about myself. I mean, I had things in my life I didn't, like, I wasn't willing to be like, okay, let me go, like, running from the law and living like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde. Like, that was no longer my aspiration in life. I wanted to fit in, but I wanted to drink, right? But it still was a problem, you know, and it wasn't a problem like I went from A's to F's. It was a problem like I had friends that didn't drink or didn't drink how I drank that would be like, hey, how about if we go shopping on Saturday at 10 a.m.? And, you know, and then I'd be like, drink until last call. Or, you know, it would be 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and I'm, you know, absolutely, you know, plastered. It's so hard to describe things without cursing sometimes. It's challenging. It really is a challenge. You know, and she'd be like, you know, and I'd show up, like, with a friend that brought me, and I'm, like, in the backseat of the car, like, passed out, and I'm thinking, this is normal, we're in college, and she's like, we were supposed to go shopping, like, I was looking forward to spending quality time with you, you know, and it was like, you know, I'd think, oh, she's so uptight, and she needs to get over it, and, you know, but it was that kind of stuff that would happen, where I would, I just drank a lot, you know. Once I got started, you know, I didn't stop. The companions that I chose, you know, ultimately that was dictated by alcohol. You know, if you've got, you know, alcohol or something else, I will hang out with you. I don't care if I'm, you know, if I'm a 21-year-old girl and you're, you know, some 58-year-old, like, sad story dude at the bar, I will hang out with you if you'll buy me drinks. You know, I mean, that's, you know, kind of what alcohol would do for me. It's basically, that's pretty much what I'm interested in life. And that went on through college. what really was a game changer for me is I got pregnant with my daughter, who goes to Georgia now. She's now 20. But when I was 22 years old, I was a senior in college, and I got pregnant with her. And that was that was a really big deal. I wasn't married. Her father was an active heroin addict that who I'd met in treatment actually when I was 16 years old, and we kind of had an on again off again kind of relationship. And he was, in my mind, he had an ailment that was very different than mine, And the reality is we had the same spiritual malady, and me being primarily a drunk and him being a heroin addict, his looked different. His involved more jail, it involved more stuff missing around the house, it involved, stuff like going to get milk at the grocery store might mean you're not back for days. So to me, it was really, it was really a problem, and it was, but, so anyway, that was a bit of a, okay, I'm having a baby, I'm 22, I'm not married. Tells me he's clean, but it's been 30 days, so I don't know how that's going to work out. But anyway, that did not work out. Unfortunately, he wound up, losing the battle and making that ultimate sacrifice. My daughter's about 4 years old and died, with a needle in his arm like a lot of heroin addicts do. So at that point for me, so it's me and my daughter. My parents lived in Colorado at that time. We move out there, and so that adds another kind of important thing in my life to the mix. It's like, okay, I like to drink, I like to party, and I want to do well in school, and I want to have a job and all that. Now I've got a little life, to take care of, and that wasn't really my plan, and I certainly didn't feel like God had been like, hey, this is something you really can handle. It just felt like another, like, how did this happen? But I respected that, being a mom is a big deal, and like my mom and my dad, I'm like, I want to do better than they did, and I don't even have the tools they have, most of my pregnancy, my beginning of my pregnancy was very much like, this is an upsetting, not knowing what to do situation. And I'm still, I'm still drinking, I'm still smoking cigarettes, and there was a point where I'm like, I'm doing this thing. And at that point, I'm like, okay, no smoking, no alcohol, no other stuff and all that. And, and that went on, and I behaved through my pregnancy. And, any women that have had babies, everybody goes through different experiences. But a lot of us, a lot of dudes here tonight too, but, sometimes those hormones are helpful and make you feel good, and it's probably God's plan, so you don't do crazy things when you're pregnant. So, and I know some women that did drink when they were pregnant, but my experience was that I was, able to kind of chill out for 9 months, and felt like, I felt like I was cured. It just was not, it wasn't an issue. If I had gotten pregnant at 33 when I came in here, I don't know that I could have not drank, because my alcoholism had progressed. But, and I remember, starting to drink again after I had her, not the minute, I remember I went through the whole, nursing thing and weaned her and that kind of thing. And then I remember meeting people that, wanted to go have a drink. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go have a drink, And I remember, again, it being pretty obvious that, it was obvious that I had the allergy, because at that point I really wanted to drink like a couple. I'm like, at this point I'm in my 20s, I'm a mom, I got a job. Like, I'd like to, when people say you want to go out and have a glass of wine or split a bottle of wine, like, I would like to split the bottle of wine and not be like going home and digging through stuff afterwards, like, or having to get more or whatever. And at that point, and this is my story and my experience, but all of us alcoholics have an allergy to alcohol. And my experience was that my allergy got worse with time. And at the beginning, it was like, it was a little bit like Russian roulette. Like, there are times I drink, I'd be able to have the two, and there are times I drink when I couldn't stop. And it would be baffling to me because it wasn't an every time thing, and that's where I would think, in my mind, I thought an alcoholic was somebody that as soon as they had a drop every time couldn't stop, and that was not my experience in the beginning. It kind of was a little bit confusing. What was it? And then we kind of got into the whole confusing mess of, Was it the shots? Was it the tequila? Was it the empty stomach? Was it that I was upset or depressed and that's why I lost control or whatever? You know, and fast forward to when I got sober in 2005, which is when my daughter was 10, you know, in between that period when she was born in like, you know, 94 and 2005, I mean, that 10-year period, you know, my alcoholism really progressed. And I would say that last 5 years, it was like, I mean, it talks about it in Bill's story where he talks about like the ski slope and how steep it is. It's kind of like it's going down slow, slow, slow. It almost was like, bam, you know, it just really dropped off. And it was like, it seemed like I would go out. At this point, I'm having people in my life, friends, boyfriends, whatever. I'm like, please cut me off. Like, I'm telling them when I go out, like, once I've had X amount, if you're seeing me getting drunk and out of control, like, you need to, you know, tell me. Well, that sounds good when I'm remorseful the next day and I have totaled a car the night before in a blackout. You know what I mean? Like, that seems like totally reasonable. And when that would happen, I would be like, you know, F you, I will physically attack you. Like, I will do whatever I need to do to get the next drink. And I don't know what you're talking about, but I told you this. And, you know, not aware that there's this allergy that's kicked in and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get more. And in my experience, it was like the way my allergy would work would be, you know, I'd want that second drink more than the first drink. And when I would get to drink 7 or 8 or 9, I mean, I'd get to a point where I'd be so drunk and I would want that drink even more like than I did that first or second one or third one. I mean, it just was, it was a lot. The craving had gotten strong and I had no idea that's what it was. I mean, I just had no idea. And then the other piece of the first step is that part where we know, like we get to a point and I got to a point where I really did not want to give up drinking because it was, I mean, it was my best friend. I loved drinking. I loved to drink alone. I loved to drink at the bar. I loved to drink. But, I mean, it was clearly, you know, wrecking up my life, you know. And other people were starting to say it. And I had a friend of mine that was from Ireland. They all drank borderline alcoholically, every single one of them. The idea of being abstinent is, you know, almost unheard of. And this person said to me, you just don't need to have any alcohol at all. Like, that was, like, his observations of me, how I drank, how I behave when I drank, how I go back to it. And I was like, dang, you know, I think he's right, you know. And so I would try things, and I was very prideful about it, like, I wasn't the type of alcoholic that would be like, I'm quitting, everybody, I'm quitting. I'd be kind of like, oh, everything's cool, you know, like, I'd come up with all these plans in my own head. I'd have journals and write stuff out because I really wanted to reserve the right to have a drink if I wanted to have a drink. I certainly did not want to tell everybody I'm not drinking and have that pulled out on me. But I would do stuff like, I'm going to go to church, I'm going to work out, I'm going to run, I'm going to try to quit smoking. I'm going to change my friends. You know, I mean, it would be these attempts to kind of clean up my life. And what would happen would be I would get where I'm like, yeah, I'm getting back in control. And then that would kind of turn into, in a week or two, kind of this clenched jaw kind of like, you know, like, don't look at me. Like, where it really got, where I'm like, I need some relief. You know, I really need some relief. And I didn't know that. And that was kind of obvious that I felt that way. But I'm like, I'm going to ride this through, you know. And I remember, like, one of those occasions going out with a friend to Taco Mac and sitting there. And the friend was like, I'll have whatever, a Coke. And I was like, I'll have a Coke. And then the waitress turns around and I'm like, you know what? I'll have a Crown and Coke. And there was no decision, no thought. I mean, I'm just like, and then the friend was like, I thought you weren't drinking. Because I remember I told this particular friend and I was like, yeah, well, you know, I did that for a couple weeks and, you know, that was a nice break, you know. And that's what I told myself. But I didn't even tell myself before I took that drink. I mean, it just was, you know, just not having the control or the ability to, you know. And at that point, it's like I'd been in the hospital a couple times. I'd been arrested. You know, I'm starting to get arrested. Like I said, you know, came out of a blackout with my car plowed into another car. I mean, stuff that was scary, you know, and, you know, keeping all this in mind, I'm a single mom, right? So, I mean, I got to get up and get my daughter to school, and I'm supposed to be, like, you know, emotionally available. I'm supposed to be, like, doing little projects and stuff. I mean, you know, it's not, this stuff is not working out that well, you know? This is not the person I want to be, you know? Like I said, I'd gotten involved with, you know, going to church, and I had a sense of, this is, like, this is the kind of mother I think I want to be, and this is the kind of mother I am, and I don't have the power to do it. It's kind of like when you want to quit smoking when you still drink, you know, and it's just not possible. It's just like, you know, it's like you're not gonna do that. And it's the same thing with drinking. It's like these behaviors, I mean, you're not gonna be the kind of woman that you want to be when you're drinking alcohol. I mean, you're just not, you know. And then I got where I drink and I try to hide the keys in my cell phone from myself because I was a real big drunk dialer, you know. And I mean, like, you know, like in the middle of the night and stuff like that, or I'd call people up. I remember there was this one friend of mine, and, you know, he was like, listen, you know, he's like, I'm living with this person, it's 3 a.m, you just woke me up, you know. And then he reiterated it with, like, an email the next day. And I was mortified. And I was like, I got it. Okay, I was drunk, but I got it, you know. And it would be kind of like I didn't need that driven home. But I did need it driven home. I did need it driven home because I was that person that would just be like, I'm going to call you drunk in the middle of the night. I'm going to be in and out of a blackout. I'm going to say weird things. And, you know, I'm that girl, you know. I really am. And, my husband's really glad that I was sober when he met me. So anyways, all this is going on. And what drove me to AA was, a couple things. I'd gotten a DUI, and I had to go to AA, or I was supposed to go to AA and get my sheet signed. You know, I'd gotten this DUI. And at that point, I remember I got the DUI. It was in Forsyth County, Georgia, and coming. And I was like, I think my blood alcohol level was like 1.7 or 1.8. And I was truly, like, when I got pulled over, I was truly like, thank God I really haven't been drinking tonight. Like, I mean, that was kind of the, I'm just getting started. I've had my drink or two before the party kind of. You know, and I was surprised that was my blood alcohol level. I mean, there's worse, but that was me thinking I was pretty good. You know, I thought I was going to pass that breathalyzer, you know, and I was, no. But that wasn't really the wake-up call or anything like that. But I went to the classes. You know, they had kind of like the driving kind of classes, like the, I don't know what they call them. There's like defensive driving, but it's for people that got a DUI. Then you got to go to those kind of treatment little classes. And then you got to go to like the little, you do the alcohol and drug counseling thing, you know, which is basically like a group of people. And I was talking to my husband about it this morning because we have a friend of ours who's, I'm about to be 10 years sober. He's about to be 11 years sober. And he came and talked to my DUI school. His name is Eddie. And Eddie's, like I said, he's still sober. He came to a group of, you know, people that weren't in AA, and he had just gotten back from a motorcycle trip with his dad to Sturgis, South Dakota, wherever that is. And he had come in with his, you know, motorcycle jacket and helmet, and he talked about, you know, what he used to be like and what happened and what he's like now at 1 year sober. And I really related to how he drank, you know. I really related to what he talked about with his mental and emotional state. You know, and the other piece I didn't mention is there was a lot of kind of like counselors and psychiatrists and doctors and different medications, and maybe I'm depressed. And it just had gotten really like, it was a drag, you know, it had become such a drag. And I say that because I got real confused with what an alcoholic is. Like, I really was thinking, I almost got to the point where I thought, I wish I was just an alcoholic, but I feel like I'm just this crazy person that drinks too much. Like, I didn't know that kind of being a crazy person can kind of really dovetail into being an alcoholic really well. You know, there's alcoholics that are, you know, kind of act nice when they drink and some that don't, you know, and I was one that didn't. But I heard a lot of my story with this guy, and I heard a life that sounded appealing. Because my fear was that being sober was going to be really boring. It was was going to be no fun, that I don't know. I just felt like I'm going to lose myself, you know, like what do you do if you don't drink? When people come up to you and say, what do you like to do for fun? And all you've ever thought since you were 14 was get messed up. I mean, if I'm really honest with you, I can say I like horses and I like chess and I like reading, and but all I really want to do is get messed up, you know. So, and this guy looked really happy. So I thought, well, maybe this AA thing's not so bad, you know. And then I had to go to this other, I went and had to get assessed, and I lied on my assessment completely and totally. And they said that they still gave me a whole lot of like therapy or whatever the group counseling stuff was, because they said that I showed a high level of defensiveness. So apparently these tests, even if you say I don't drink that much, they kind of test your personality, and they're like, you know, you've got that kind of personality. And I was like, dang it. So I had to go to all these classes. Well, it turned out that the person that led that little class that I went to was a counselor at the treatment center I was in when I was 16. But neither of us recognized each other. And then I finally realized who she was. So here I am, I'm 33, and, you know, it was whatever it was, 17 years ago. And I'm like, dang, I know who that, because I heard her name, and I'm like, I know who that is. And because I had lied to her about all my experience, and at one point I went to her and I said, hey, I lied to you about my history. And I said, in fact, I was in the treatment center you were a counselor in 17 years ago. I mean, that's how long this has been going on, you know. And that was my first kind of honesty. It was sort of outer honesty, but I've always been the actor, like living the double life. Like I was really big into you know, trying to look a certain way to you. And some of it had to do with my schooling or my job or whatever, trying to look a certain way, but, you know, really keeping things separated. Like, this is who I want you to think that I am. And so that was a big step for me, just to say, I'm not who I'm trying to pretend that I am. And she probably was like, yeah, you know, I figured that out. But anyway, by the grace of God, I didn't get a sponsor. I went to meetings like a couple times a week, and that's what I did the first 6 months. And I don't know how I didn't drink. I mean, it really was God's grace, you know. I was pretty uncomfortable. I did feel like I was white knuckling it at some points. But like I told myself, like, let's give this a year and see. Because I'm hearing this information and I'm like, I think I'm an alcoholic, maybe. And maybe that's all that's wrong with me. Because I really just was thinking, you know, I probably have 10 problems and I'm going to need alcohol to deal with those 10 problems, you know, as opposed to, you know, if I get sober. And I remember talking to this lady that was the counselor, and she's like, you know, it might be, she's like talking about how alcoholism's like the first thing you really want to deal with, you know, and, you know, if you get sober and you work the steps and work the program, whatever, like, you know, maybe you'll find your life gets better, you know. And, you know, long story short, yeah, I mean, it has and it did, you know, I mean, no question about it. But it took me about 6 months, you know, to get there. I mean, I was like, I got sober in August. The holidays were kind of rough. Like, I started going from a meeting or two a week to like going to more meetings because I'm starting to feel that, you know, kind of need some relief kind of feeling. And, you know, 8111 had those marathon meetings for, like, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I'm, like, hanging out there all the time and, you know, just going to all the meetings, going outside, smoking cigarettes, complaining to people, you know, just about how it sucked. And, you know, and then I met this lady that became my first sponsor. And she shared about what it was like, you know, for her, what she used to be like and what happened to her, what she was like now. And she drank a lot how I drank. She got sober about the same age that I got sober, but she was probably in her mid-40s. She's probably like my age now that got sober when, you know, she was about the age I was when I got sober. And I related to her drinking. I related to, you know, just the whole way she was. And I wanted her to sponsor me. And I was scared, you know. And then I had a friend that she sponsored her, and I wanted to, I finally got the courage up to ask her to sponsor me, and she said, she's like, are you an alcoholic? And I was like, yeah. And I still was like not 100% even on that, but I was like, yeah, you know. And she's like, are you willing to go to any lengths to win victory over alcohol? And I was like, yeah. But of course I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I was still a bit of a skeptic, you know. And then she's like, okay, well, I can sponsor you. And then she's like, well, I want you to call me at, and she asked when I worked, and she wanted me to call her the next morning, or she wanted me to call her at 7:30 every morning, and it was like a Saturday. And I was like, well, tomorrow is Sunday, so like, what time do you want me to call you tomorrow, you know? And she's like, 7:30 a.m., and I was like, oh, no. I was like, this is not going to work. I think I did it like one day or something, and then a couple days, then I like didn't call her one morning and like called her at like 11 a.m. and left a message like, hey, thanks for the help. I think, I don't really know this is exactly what I need right now, but it was like one of those deals, you know. And she knows exactly what it is, you know, and you don't have to like call somebody early in the morning or call somebody at any time at all. But the point is, if you're like, if you're ready, you're gonna, you know, you might take a suggestion, you know, if you really want help. And I really wasn't ready. By February, I became ready. I really did. Like, I made it through the holidays and all that. And by, like, my birthday, which I just had, you know, last week, I was like, I think I want to kill myself. I mean, I seriously was like, I am depressed. Everything's, like, spinning out of control. Like, I just can't even face to, like, get out of bed and, like, live life. And then I was like, I felt this way when I drinking, you know, like maybe the alcohol's not the problem, like, because I feel this way still, like, why do I feel this way, you know? So anyway, I called this lady back up, and I kind of told her a little bit about, and I just like totaled my car in sobriety, and that was such a chafer. It's like I'd had all this stuff like drinking, and then I'm like, I'm stone cold sober, and I just had my car just totally like spin, like going down a hill, and like it got caught by a tree, and the cop was like, if you were like a little bit over, you might have been dead right now. And I was just like, you know, like, why is this happening? And I'm sober, you know. But that was like, that little incident was kind of a pivotal moment too, because I had this like these few seconds where I thought, this is it, I'm dying, you know, because I'm going backwards down this hill and my car's like spinning out of control. That was one of those cars. That was the car that I was saying how in early sobriety I was very attached to having old German cars. So like they're expensive and they always have issues. You know, I couldn't just like suck it up and get a Japanese car. I had to have like an old German car. But and so that was what happened. But I remember in those few minutes, like going down, or the seconds, I'm sure, thinking like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die the way I am now. Like I really felt like, like, I don't want this to be the end of this life that I have because I'm miserable. Like, it's just, you know, it just was, like, not the way I wanted to go out at all. Of course, it's selfish. I'm not thinking about my daughter or my family or anything. It's just, like, me. But the truth was I wasn't happy. So I did call the sponsor back, and I told her everything. And I'm like, and I was supposed to get my stuff out of this totaled car. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I go to work. Do I go to a meeting? Do I get back in bed? Like, my whole body hurt from that accident. And she was like, well, you know, where are you supposed to be right now? And I was like, at work. And she's like, well, when you go to work, call me when you get off work, you know? And I did. And it was cool. You know, at that time, I needed some good early direction. And at the beginning, it was basically like, she gave me really simple, clear-cut directions. I mean, it was like, pray in the morning and at night. You know, in the morning, you ask God for what you need to stay sober. And at night, you thank him, you know, for keeping you sober. I didn't have any issues. I mean, I had issues with God, but I mean, not the kind of issues where I'm like, I'm not going to pray. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do that. She wanted me to go to a meeting every day. She wanted me to get to the meeting early. She sponsored a few gals, so she'd be like, well, they're going here. I want you to meet them there at this time, you know, and I'd be like, it would be people I didn't know, but she'd be like, you know, go say hi to this girl, sit with her or whatever. I mean, she had me in the big book, you know, reading the book, and I'd meet with her every week and go to, like, her big book study and stuff, and that was cool. And what was cool about that for me is I had surrendered, right? I mean, I kind of got relief almost as soon as that happened because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be, like, a weird person. I don't know if my life's going to suck, if it's going to be worse. I don't care. I give up. I mean, I really just finally gave up, you know, and was willing to do what somebody else, you know, what they suggested that I do. And that was, you know, that was pretty much my first step, right? Like, I have this obsession. I drink when I don't want to drink, and I, when I start drinking, I can't stop, right? You know, I got that part. You know, the rest of the steps going through that, my first sponsor, we went through the steps like pretty rapidly. Like we spent a lot of time on step one, like in the book. Like we spent a lot of time reading like those first like 57 pages of the book, which is like, you know, everything through We Agnostics. So really steps one and two. And for me, that was really important. Like some people come in here and they are so beat up. They're just like, I know I'm an alcoholic. I got it. I have an allergy. I have an obsession. Like I was really delusional, and like I still can be really delusional today, which is why I still do these steps, because it, you know, it helps me stay in touch with God and reality. But I needed help, like seeing that it's like, most times that I drink, I can't stop. And like, like non-alcoholics, like they pretty much never happens to them, you know, like most normal people would not think it's acceptable if they're like, well, only four times a week do I black out and find myself in strangers' homes. Like, you know, most people would be like, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, is it really worth it? You know, like I really needed some help understanding that I am an alcoholic, you know, I am this thing, because I just was so, I just was delusional. I mean, it's killing me, and I'm like clinging to the thing that's killing me, right? So, and you know, and I was told there's a reason why, like, the recovery portion of the book is like a third the first step, a third the 12th step, and everything else is a third. Like 2 to 11 is a third. And so there's a reason. You know, we need that idea smashed that we're ever going to drink like normal people again, you know? And so once that happened, then it's like, you know, steps 3, you know, 2, 3 on are pretty much like, okay, now I'm got to give the rest of me to a power greater than myself, you know? And that power today, it's become more and more broad for me. Some people get more specific, you know, like they come in broad and they kind of narrow. I kind of came in narrow and I've gotten really broad, you know? I mean, like if you were sacrificing goats and that was your religion, I might be like, you know what? That's cool too. You know, like I've really gotten kind of broad in my God experience, because what I find is that just like with drinking, like when I put a drink in me, like something happens and I experience it, and you can't tell me what I'm doing is wrong because this is my experience with it, you know? But it's like with God, it's the same way. Like it's not about what's in my head. It's the power part. Like it's tapping into that power. And once I've tapped into that power, I mean, you can't tell me anything that's like my experience is my experience, you know? Like I don't want to drink today. You know, I'm happy. I'm sometimes joyous. I'm not totally free, but I'm getting there, you know? And it's like, I know that that has to do with that power. Like, I know when I'm running my life, even at like over 9 years sober, like I will get where I just like, you know, like these are the things that I want. They're good things, you know? And I'm going to get those things with my willpower. And I get miserable. You know, when I do that, I get miserable. I mean, they could be things like, I want to connect with my daughter. I want to have a good marriage. I want to be a good employee. But like when my ego is driving that, like it gets weird. Like it starts to get where I'm twisted around the axle and I get delusional again, where I think I'm like this great person, but I'm really just trying to run the show for myself, you know? And that's what like the third step talks about a lot. You know, it kind of talks about like how we, you know, we want to run the show even when, you know, even when our motives are good, right? You know, like it says that, you know, we're the victim of a delusion that we can rest, meaning kind of, you know, snatch satisfaction and happiness out of the world only if we manage well. And like most non-alcoholics, like I'd say most, I don't know about most, but a lot of non-alcoholics live that way too. I mean, I think most people, you know, my opinion, they are like, this is what I want. I want to live here. I want my kids to go to school here. I want my husband to act this way. I want people to respect me, think well of me, and I'm working towards those goals, you know? And so that's probably normal. It's just that for us alcoholics, like, we don't do it, like, a little bit. Like, we go overboard. And so the key for us with the steps, it's not like, oh, well, don't go overboard. It's like, no, you got to give that stuff up. Like, it's basically like God, you know, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you want. Like, you now get to have that stuff because there's stuff driving it in my head that is just not right. And it's really cool because it's been a few years, and I'm just now honestly learning, like, what drives me, you know, like, what it is that drives me. Like, if I think, like, my daughter's not happy with me, like, I'm learning how selfish I am. And I don't mean, like, I'm selfish, like, I'm a bad person, but my ego, it's, like, it's all about me, like, my sensitivity, and I'm, like, it's all about, like, am I a good mom? Do people think I'm a good mom? Like, I have to be the best mom. Like, I can't just be an okay mom. I can't just be an okay worker, you know? I can't just be an okay wife, you know? And those are all the things that will drive us back to a drink, you know, if they stay. The other thing, too, is that's the free piece. Like, if we can, like, you know, the short form of the steps is, like, discover, disclose, and discard, you know. And if we can do that, that's where the freedom comes in, you know. It's like we drink because we're looking for a sense of ease and comfort. And the steps is designed to produce a sense of ease and comfort. I mean, it's designed to, and that's where I was saying, like, the fact that, like, I didn't think about this speaking thing, like, up until today is, like, a miracle. Because I used to be, like, really scared of talking in front of people. And it would be like, oh, let me, like, walk around and rehearse it. Like, I didn't think about it at all. And it's because I'm not that worried today about, like, what you think about me. I'm still kind of worried, right? Like, it's not like I don't care, but I'm not obsessed with it. And that's pretty big because that's the kind of stuff that gets us tied up in knots, you know? So I just went back through the steps recently, and I'm in the middle of my fifth step right now. So that's why I say I'm kind of free, you know? But it was a lot of stuff. Like, I had really, like, it talks in the big book about, like, resting on our laurels, you know? And I wouldn't say, like, I wasn't doing anything, but I was talking to someone before the meeting about it. Like, we can get what we're doing gets kind of repetitive. Like, I say the same prayer, I go to the same meetings, you know, I have the same conversations. Like, yeah, I'm pissed off at a few people, but whatever. You know, I'm not, like, really getting down to, like, root causes or, like, why am I this pissed off at these people? Why is it that I'm dissatisfied with my daughter, with my job, with this? Like, is it really them or is it me, you know? And anyway, that kind of prompted me to go back through the steps, and it's been really cool. So, you know, I'd recommend it. I don't really think it's... Some people are like, it's one and done, and some people are like, you can keep doing it, and I'm enjoying it. And something else I've been doing that's been really cool lately, and this is I've been meditating. Like, my goal is twice a day, and I set my little timer, like, on this massive phone I now have, and I just set it for, like, 5 minutes on the timer, and I just breathe. And it's really, I mean, it's helped a lot. It's really helped a lot because... I mean, God speaks to us through our heads. Like, it's not like we get intuitive thoughts and decisions, but a lot of what's going through my head most of the time, if I watch and I'm quiet, is basically what I want and how I'm going to get it, right? Like, it's kind of like, I have a deadline at work. I'm going to do this. This is how I'm going to get it done. I'm going to talk to this guy and get him to help me with this part of the project so I can do this. It's all about how I can maneuver and get what I want. And, like, when I sit and I'm quiet and I breathe, I can just kind of watch that stuff and be like, this is not me. It's not really, like, the child of God that's, you know, the spirit part. This is, like, this ego that's just constantly afraid it's not going to get what it wants, you know. And I can just connect with the God part. And so I try to do that twice a day. At a minimum, I do it once a day. And it's gotten where, like, I feel pretty peaceful when I do it. So that's kind of cool. And then... you know, service is awesome. Like, you know, stuff like this is great. Sponsoring people is great. Like I said, it's hard. Like, sponsoring people is hard because a lot of people don't stick around, you know? And, like, sponsees do break your heart. I mean, they totally, like, sometimes they stay sober and they'll still just kind of, like, drift off. And a lot of times they get drunk. Like, I had a gal I absolutely loved and, you know, and I could see the tension coming back in her, and I'm still like, this is what I did, but it's like, you're not in control. Like, you watch this person, and you're seeing them get intense, and she's supposed to call me, and she didn't, and somebody was like, you know, she's got drunk, and she's back in the hospital, and it's like, dang, you know, but I know it's not, she has no choice. I mean, unless she's been relieved until we've recovered, like, we're going to drink, you know? So they break your hearts, but sometimes there's successes with that. But anyway, I really appreciate you guys asking me to talk. It was a lot of fun, and hope you guys have a happy Valentine's Day.